And welcome, everyone. Thanks so much. Great to learn with you. I'm just going to mute everyone, but feel free to unmute. I just muted myself. That was a mistake. This is what I meant to do. Perfect. And I'm looking forward to learning with you tonight. Welcome back to Mining Maimonides. Brief review of what we did last time. In our last discussion, we were talking about we've been talking about for a number of weeks, which is the importance of calibrating one's character traits, making sure that one isn't on any extreme. And specifically, we discussed the story in the Torah of Me'meriva, which was the story of Moshe Rabbeinu and Aharon being punished for something they did wrong when the Bnei Yisrael complained for water. Had something to do with taking water out of the rock. Hashem punishes Moshe and Aharon pretty severely. And the Rambam's take was that the punishment was for Moshe and Aharon presumably losing their temper and using a derogatory term to chastise Klal Yisrael at a time when the Rambam claims we don't see that God was angry at them. And Rambam says specifically when a leader demonstrates a character flaw, and in this context, when someone of Moshe Rabbeinu's stature expressed anger at the Bnei Yisrael, it was wrong in that it's generally wrong to express anger in that extreme way. It was wrong in that Bnei Yisrael learned from Moshe Rabbeinu as their role model and leader. And it was wrong in that they understood that God was upset at them and angry at them for asking for water, although their tone wasn't perfect. But Rambam says we don't find that God was even angry at them. In fact, he granted their request pretty willingly. But this is all connected to, as opposed to other explanations, Moses hit the rock instead of talking to the rock. He hit it twice. He hit the wrong rock. He said, shall we bring out water for you? Which made it indicated that it was him and Aaron making the water come out of the rock instead of God. As opposed to all of those explanations, Rambam focuses on the traits of anger specifically because that was very important to Rambam, the importance of character. So today I want to have a different discussion. We're gonna finish. Hopefully, that was the end of chapter 4 in the Rambam's introductory 8 chapters to Berakhei Avot. And today we're going to do number 5. And before we do that, I'd like to ask the following question to start our conversation, which is as follows. I'd like to know what you think about this. From a religious perspective, right, in terms of thinking about the ideal religious schedule, your ideal schedule, is there such a thing as free time, right? So if you are creating the ideal schedule and we're going to be maximalists here tonight, we're going to try to be the best servants of God that we possibly can, right? So if you're going to create the ideal religious schedule, is there any time on that schedule for free time?
Yes.
Paul says yes. Okay, good. Any other ideas? Why, Paul? Why do you say it's time for free time?
Let Paul
have a chance. I'm sorry. Go for it.
Free time to me means independent and creative thinking on basis of what you've read, what you've learned, what you've discussed. It's time to let your imagination, your thoughts gel in the way you want them to so that you can carry on relationship with Hashem, relationship with your fellow human beings, and be a part of the learning process. So there is time where you have to gel these things in your own head. That's my opinion.
That was incredibly inspirational, Paul. Wow. That was like, if that's the free time we're talking about, that's pretty good. And I think you expressed that very beautifully. Yeah. So Paul's version of free time is for time for creative thinking, to allow your mind to process things and participate in a relationship with God. Any other ideas?
Well, yeah, I'm taking another view of free time. My view is free time being time away from what you're doing regularly so that you can maximize your health. And I have knowledge of the story of the Chofetz Chaim, who, when he was in yeshiva, he overstudied to the point of like a nervous breakdown, and they told him to take a year off. The doctor told him to take a year off from study. I don't know if you must have heard that story.
Yeah, right? There are stories of that. In fact, the story goes of the Chofetz Chaim. A different one is that he used to go into the yeshiva and turn the lights off at a certain hour of the night. He would turn off the lights in the Beit Midrash. Right? Could you imagine that? And he said, "That's it. Time to go to sleep." Such is the story.
That's after he probably got sick himself, and his psychiatrist told him to gave him that idea.
Okay, that, beautiful.
You can't just study.
Good. Any other thoughts about free time? Obviously, I think what we're seeing is the question is how free is our free time? I think that's the question to ask here. Is it actually free? And what do we mean by that? So go for it, Alan.
I don't know that Paul's view, as good as it was, is something that's going to be, unanimously shared by a lot of other people.
Right.
I think, that some people look at it as saying, I've got to prevent myself from having a nervous breakdown. I just want to chill. I want to relax. I don't want to do anything constructive. So I think it very much depends on what you're going to be doing during that time to make up the definition of what it is.
Right. Right. So you're saying, Alan argues. One second. I'll give you a second. Just give me one second, Charles. Alan argues. I think, Paul is very intense with his free time. That's a lot to ask from people.
Even free time is playing time. Thinking.
What about just shooting the breeze? What if I just want to watch the football game? Rabbi. Recent current events. I just want to watch the football game. It's fun. It's entertaining. I want to relax. I work hard all week. I just want to relax every once in a while. What about that?
But it's not free time. It's planned time.
Meaning?
All the time. Even time that you're not doing what you're supposed to be doing, it's still planned. You're going to do this. You're going to do that. It's still planned.
So it has to be planned. Go for it, Charlie. What do you think?
Even God had free time. It's called Shabbat.
So how free is Shabbat supposed to be? Is Shabbat going to be free time of the Paul variety or of the Allen's variety?
Well, it has
God doing all day if he wasn't creating the world.
It has hundreds of rules.
Hundreds of rules. That's true. It's not so free, is it? In that sense. So what I like to do now, I like to take a look at the Rambam. The Rambam is sort of going to tackle this. And I think you'll find on the one hand, his perspective is pretty extreme. At the same time, it's also quite enlightening. And inspirational, I find. But I think it's more flexible than you might have thought. And I think what we're going to distinguish between is two different questions about what we mean when we say free time. One question is what you are doing, meaning the type of pursuit. And I think this is sort of what Ralph just said, in that time, when you said time that you're doing what you're not supposed to be doing, what I take that to mean is there may be certain default preoccupations or ways in which we're supposed to use our time. Let's say really fundamental religious pursuits, learning, mitzvot, kindness, praying, etc., etc. And then the free time means time when you're not doing those things. So one question is free time in terms of the activity that you are engaged in. But there's another question, which I think the Rambam thinks is specifically very essential, which is not about what you're doing, but about why. About why you're doing it or what your goal is in doing it. And it could be that often in terms of whether a pursuit is appropriate or not, depends much on the second question as it does the first. So now I'm going to share my screen. We're going to go to the fifth chapter of each chapter. Before we do that, actually, I want to just finish one little snippet, just picking up from what we did last week, where the Rambam concludes his discussion of character and taking the middle course. So let's just read the end of this, and then we'll get to the Rambam's take on free time. Now let me return to my subject. After describing the Memeriva, the Chetz, the sin of Moshe Rabbeinu and losing his temper when the Jews complained for water, right? Rambam writes as follows. You know, that was a bit of a digression. You see, even the Rambam digressed every once in a while. So for those of us who sometimes get off topic, you know, you can take comfort in the Rambam getting off topic too. If a man will always carefully discriminate as regards his actions, directing them to the medium course, he will reach the highest degree of perfection possible to a human being, thereby approaching God and sharing in his happiness or goodness. So I will say for the Rambam is, and it's going to happen this next chapter also, the Rambam demands a lot from us. He demands a real work on character, almost perfect calibration of all our character traits. But he says the reward is worth it. It's commensurate. The highest degree of closeness to God, sharing in his goodness. This is the most acceptable way of serving God, which the sages too had in mind when they wrote the words, these words. And now he's quoting Gemara and Sota. He who orders his course aright, which the literal translation is Hashem or Chotav, somebody who assesses his ways, is worthy of seeing the salvation of God, as it is said, V'sam derech arenab yesh alokim, to him that orders his course will I show the salvation of God. Do not read V'sam and he who places, but V'sham derech. Shin mem means to assess, to evaluate, to determine whether a person's ways of acting are on the right path. Shuma means weighing and valuation. This is exactly the idea which you explain in this chapter. This is all we think we necessary to be sound on the subject. So end chapter 4, move on to chapter 5 and our topic for tonight. So the first paragraph is going to sound very intense, I think. You will agree. As we have explained in the preceding chapter, it is the duty of man to subordinate all the faculties of his soul to his reason. He must keep his mind's eye fixed constantly upon one goal, namely the attainment of the knowledge of God, may he be blessed, as far as it is possible for mortal man to know him. Consequently, one must so adjust all his actions, his whole conduct, and even his very words, that they lead to this goal, in order that none of his deeds be aimless and thus retard the attainment of that end. Okay, so reading this paragraph in the Rambam, all his actions, his whole conduct, does the Rambam leave us room for free time?
No.
Sounds like no, right? No free time. All his actions, his whole conduct, and even his very words, that they lead to this goal being the attainment of the knowledge of God. That sounds pretty intense, all-encompassing. Not so much room for free
time. In a way.
Yeah.
In a way, I think it still might leave room. I think it still might leave room because he recognizes, the Rambam, that a person has to be in good health to be able to value God. If he's not in good health, he can't value God properly.
Right. 100%.
So that being the case, then a person should be able to rest.
Right. I hear you.
Okay.
I hear you. So we'll have to see. Gail, raise her hand. We've been talking about character, and I think it demonstrates great character, especially on Zoom, to click the raise hand icon. So I certainly want to reward Gail for raising her hand. Yes, Gail, go for it.
I mean, I think, can you hear me?
Yeah, perfectly.
I think a lot of it sounds like it's intent. And I think ultimately it depends on your honesty with your intent. I mean, I can play a game with my kid. And maybe some people can say, well, that's wasting my time. Or maybe I could say, well, no, this game actually is a good way for my kid to practice control of his emotions, because this is a very, this is a game that gets very passionate very quickly. And I'm teaching him something by playing this game.
Assuming that you lose your control of your competitive nature also, right?
Exactly. We both have to work on it. So, I mean, I'll never forget when I was a kid, we were learning some Gemara. I forgot what it was. And the rabbi was reading it, and he said that this rabbi, some, you know, this Amora or Tana, went to the bathhouse because he was doing a chesed for his body. And I was like, whoa, that's an interesting way of framing this. I mean, it sounds like you can, like a smart person could always frame something a certain way to make it sound good. I guess in the end, it's really how honest you are about that intention.
Right. Okay. So a lot of people are mentioning this notion of intention, right? What the Rambam is really describing here is a person aiming their goals, aiming their actions toward the goal of knowledge of God. And Gale points out that, you know, and I'll just quote the line of the Kutzkireva. You know, a lot of people, when they eat on Shabbos, what do they say? What do you say if you want to sound very religious and you're eating on Shabbos? L'chavid Shabbos Kodesh, right? Take a nice spoon of the soup. Ah, l'chavid Shabbos Kodesh. And the Kutzkireva used to take a spoon of chicken soup and say, l'chavid my boich, which means in Yiddish, for the honor of my belly. His point was, don't blame your gluttony on Shabbos, right? Like, meaning if it's the Chavod Shabbos, it is. But if it's not, and you're just, you know, another piece of kugel, L'Chavod Shabbos, another L'Chaim, another L'Chaim, L'Chavod Shabbos, right? At some point, Gail's pointing out, we might start to question the sincerity of your claims to Chavod Shabbos. So I hear, but it has to do with the goal. Okay.
Good. Rabbi, question?
Yeah, Paul raised his hand. Paul raised his hand. And then I don't take Charlie, then I move on. You go for it, Paul.
I'm bothered by the words fixed constantly.
Constantly, okay.
Fixed constantly. If it's constantly, I interpret that word to mean all the time.
Correct.
So where's the flexibility?
Well, the question is... Sorry, go for it, yeah.
You can interpret anything to be... for the purpose of lefora kodesh.
Right. So the question is, constantly describes your activity or constantly describes your aim? Now, you know what, Paul? I would agree with you. At this point, I would agree with you. So the question is going to be as follows, right? Is there any limit to this? Does the Rambam, meaning Rambam's going to now, let's read the next paragraph, and then I want to see what you think.
But,
I
don't know, just like one question. Fine,
quick, Charlie. Quick. Go for it.
Can you define or explain the words, the attainment of the knowledge of God? What does that actually mean?
Very good.
Good question. Ram says it a lot. I think it means understanding more about God, right?
About what God wants from us. We can't understand him.
Well, to whatever degree you can. To whatever degree you can. Now, you might say that it's a very limited part of knowledge, but I think that you'll see the Rambam is going to really, I think you'll see is twofold. At first glance, it seems very intense. I think it is intense, by the way. Let's just be clear. This is demanding. As much as we can say you can do this for, you know, you can play a board game for the, like, for the Kavod Shemayim, you can get it. You can take an exercise. You can roll. It's a lot to ask for. And that gets to Paul's question about constant. Constant means a constant aim in terms of your intent to constantly be on one goal. It is a lot. But I think you'll be surprised at what sort of activities the Rambam describes, which can be under the purview of this goal of trying to attain the knowledge of God. I think you'll be surprised. So hold that thought. That being said, the Rambam is going to say this should mean that certain things that we may otherwise do should be less frequently on our schedule. So he's going to say this. Let's take a look here, though. So his only design, and again, he's describing your intent in eating, drinking, cohabiting, sleeping, walking, moving about, and resting should be the preservation of bodily health. So you eat, drink, sleep, etc., etc., so that you are healthy. While in turn, the reason for the latter, i.e. bodily health, the reason you're striving for physical health, is that the soul and its agencies, meaning all your intellectual and emotional powers, may be in sound and perfect condition, so that he may readily acquire wisdom and gain moral and intellectual virtues. So to your point, Charlie, when in terms of this goal of knowledge of God, that seems a little bit more specific, acquiring wisdom and gaining moral virtues, meaning everything we described in the previous chapter, helping yourself to become a better person. And intellectual virtues, as the Rambam described, helping your thinking, helping you problem solve and attain knowledge, etc. All to the end that man may reach the highest goal of those endeavors. So I think what you see here is there's like primary goals and secondary goals, all leading to one, end goal, right? So the Rambam says a person, and here's the thing, I think he's being pretty clear about this. A person is very tired. Such things have happened to us, right? I'm sure we've all been very tired. Some of you might be very tired as we speak. It's an 8 o'clock, it's 8:20 or so on a Monday night, right? So you're very tired. And a person's got to say, I'm going to sleep. I'm going to sleep early tonight. So you should sleep. Of course you should sleep. The Rambam is saying a person should sleep. But why are you sleeping? So the answer one is, well, look, I'm very tired. My body needs rest. My muscles need a rest. Maybe my mind needs to rest. You know, and just physically, we need sleep to recharge our batteries. So I am resting for my physical health. But the Rambam is saying that's not enough. It's not enough to ask the question of why am I sleeping? Oh, for my physical health. And for what reason do you want physical health? Now, at this point, some of you might be saying, for what reason do I want physical health? Well, that's obvious why I want physical health. Rambam says, no. The next question is, the reason that you want physical health is for another goal. And that is to achieve your goal of life. Right? What the Rambam is saying is wisdom and moral and intellectual virtue. You're resting so that you can do the things most important the next day, the things that are more fundamental. So all of this can be channeled in the service of God, but I do think that there's primary and secondary motivations. And this could be with anything. There could be a series of this thing. And he says, even your movements. I'm lifting my hand right now. The reason that I am doing that is to make an example of the sort of thing the Rambam would want me to do for the purpose of serving God, right? And I'm doing that to teach Torah and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And we keep asking the why question until we get to the highest goal accordingly. Now, so that's in terms of intent, right? In terms of why. But that also affects the what we do. Accordingly, man will not direct his attention merely to obtain bodily enjoyment, choosing of food and drink and other things of life. Only the agreeable, meaning that which tastes good, what he's calling a rave, that which is pleasant, but he will seek out the most useful, what the Rambam calls mo'il. A rave means something that I enjoy, that's pleasant, that fulfills my appetites. Mo'il means something that is effective in achieving the goal of the sort of thing that I'm doing. That's nutritious, that gives my body the energy that it needs. If a person, so I'm saying, if your intent is truly to eat for the purpose of physical health so that you can serve God better and achieve your goal, it's not just enough to think I'm doing it to serve God. I'm doing it to serve God. V'chavod Shabbos Kodesh, right? What you need to be thinking is also, well, if that's really my goal, should I be eating X, Y, and Z? Z, excuse me. I'm in Toronto. I apologize. X, Y, and Z. And if the answer is, you know, and look, I'm just as guilty as everybody else, and maybe there's more room than we think, and I'll get to that. But, okay. But if the answer is no, the piece of chocolate cake is not actually going to advance my goal of advancing my physical health or emotional health, we'll say for now, then I shouldn't be eating it. So it's both what you do and when you, and why you do it. And he's going to say, there are indeed times. So here's where I think you see the openness to the Rambam in this regard. There are indeed times when the agreeable may be used from a curative point of view. So now the Rambam is being a bit of a psychologist. And John, I'll take your question just a second. So the Rambam is going to say, first he says, we generally should look toward that which is mo'il, that which is effective, nutritious, and helpful, and avoid that which is pleasant. But he says, sometimes you need that. Sometimes you need that piece of chocolate cake. For instance, when one suffers from a loss of appetite, it may be stirred up by highly seasoned delicacies and agreeable, palatable food. Sometimes you need that to help stir your appetite. Similarly, one who suffers from melancholia may rid himself of it by listening to singing and all kinds of instrumental music, by strolling through beautiful gardens and splendid buildings, by gazing upon beautiful pictures and other things that enliven the mood and dissipate gloomy moods. So to me, this is actually quite enlightening, where the Rambam is, you know, while you might have thought the prototypical, I don't know, yeshiva bacher. Imagine someone who's learning yeshiva all day and all night. And you tell them, you know what, I'd like to go take a nice walk in the garden just to enjoy the fresh air and the scenery and look at the beautiful flowers and take a nice whiff of them and maybe see a few butterflies. And what's that person in the base medrash going to tell you? It's bittul Torah. How can you do that? How can you spend so much time just enjoying yourself if you could otherwise be learning Torah? And what would the Rambam respond to that sort of argument? I think he'd respond, it's not so simple. Maybe not. It could be totally appropriate to take that walk in the botanical gardens. That's what the Rambam just said, strolling through beautiful gardens, splendid buildings. Sometimes a person's down and they're in a bad mood. And the Rambam recognizes this and he realizes that at that point, simply saying, I'm just going to charge on and charge on, and I'm going to just keep going and going and plugging away or learning or working or praying, etc., isn't healthy. And you need to take care of your psychological, emotional self as well. But the question is, when you're doing that, why are you doing it? What are you saying is your goal in doing it? And he says the purpose of all of this is to restore the healthful condition of the body, but the real object in maintaining the body in good health is, and this is the Rambam's constant focus on this goal, is to acquire wisdom. Likewise, in the pursuit of wealth, the main design in its acquisition should be to expend it for noble purposes. So again, this is not a what question, but a why question. A person is trying to gain their bottom line, trying to gain, you know, wealth and assets. The Rambam is saying that whether it's appropriate or not depends upon why you're doing it. If you are doing it to expend it for noble purposes, that's appropriate. And to employ for the maintenance of the body and the preservation of life that its owner may obtain a knowledge of God insofar as it is vouchsafed unto men as much as possible. So I think you see here a certain openness in terms of what you are allowed to do. And the question is why you're allowed to do it. So I want to pause here. Jonathan, you wanted to ask the question. Go for it, Jonathan. Jonathan?
Mute. Okay, can you hear me now? Go.
Yeah.
Okay. So I want to just ask you, Rabbi Bergman, I guess I've got two questions. One is, I seem to remember a shiur, not in Shaar Shamayim, but many years ago, in a different place, in which, if I remember correctly, it was said that according to the Rambam, a person's day should be divided into three parts: sleeping 8 hours, working 8 hours, learning 8 hours. Is that correct?
I had to look it up. He definitely recommends 8 hours. I'm not sure if he recommends working for 8 hours. I don't know about that. I think you might be conflating two different things. The Rambam says you should split your day of learning into three. And the Rambam also says you should sleep for 8 hours. I'm not sure if he says you should split your day into three, though. He says you should split your learning day into three. He actually says in one place, you know, this, if I remember correctly, he says you should learn, you know, and I don't know if this is so feasible in terms of scheduling. The Rambam was very adamant about making a living, by the way, and not getting supported by others for your Torah learning. Right. That being said, the Rambam felt that you could learn for 9 hours a day and work for three. That is what he says in the Mishnah Torah at some point. Not sure that's always so feasible. But anyways, yeah.
Okay, so I was just asking how that would fit into this. So you don't think that doesn't sound familiar to you that he said eight?
Well, the sleeping 8 hours is definitely familiar. And I think the Rambam says that because he thinks that's how much you need to function optimally. That you should sleep as much as you need so that you can think and go about your day and maximize your capabilities.
Right.
Now, the question, though, isn't how much you sleep, but why you sleep. And if before you take your 8 hours of sleep, you tell yourself, I am doing it for the goal of my physical health, so that I can use my full capability to serve God and attain the knowledge of him, then that's great. So it's not about the quantity, but the reason. Why are you doing it? Sorry, go for it.
So that's the one question. The other is, there's another concept which, if I'm correct, more relates to the question of tshuva, but I'm wondering if it has a place here, which is the whole concept of the nekudas habechira.
Okay.
Which I understand, you can correct me if I'm wrong, means where is one's place, meaning so for example, you know, I don't get a mazel tov if I don't mug the lady across the street.
I understand.
Right, I'm just explaining like in terms of everybody else, but if somebody grew up in like, you know, a crime and had a criminal record a mile long, you know, they might get a yeshakoyach for not mugging the lady across the street. So I guess what I'm just saying is, my question is, how does this sort of the concept of this kind of relative approach play into this? I know it's sort of more often read from a tshuva perspective, but how does the concept of the nekudas habechira fit into what we're talking about this evening, if at all?
Right. So I think it does. And the Rambam is going to explicate something here. And I think this is aiming for the top. Meaning, I think the Rambam is very well aware that what he is describing and what he is saying everyone should strive for is very demanding and is hard to accomplish, and not everyone gets there, if that answers your question. So I think if you're asking, you know, are people sort of judged and evaluated in terms at different places based on their capabilities? Maybe some people need some time where they can just sort of relax and others need less. I think the answer is that the Rambam certainly understands that this is not a small ask. But to your point, I do want to continue. Before we continue, I want to sort of return to our original question for a second. And in terms of Alan's original formulation of free time, so Alan said, free time is, what about free time just to do nothing particular and that's productive? What about free time just to shoot the breeze, just to relax, to watch the football game? Do you think the Rambam allows for that at this point? What do we think?
Certainly not.
Certainly not. Okay.
I say why? That because why there's no that? Ultimate benefit for it.
There's no ultimate benefit. Okay.
As far as we know, you're not adding for what purpose? You're not saying that he's doing this for a purpose. Free time, you're saying for its own value. Now, for its own value, he certainly doesn't go along with that. He goes along with free time for a benefit, an ultimate benefit, if that benefit is under the umbrella of knowledge of God in particular.
But why do we watch sports events? We watch them primarily because we're fascinated by the logistics, by the way you organize things to achieve your goal, and you learn something from that.
Ralph says there might be something constructive about it if watched in the right way. Although, Ralph, you're reading a lot into your typical football
game. What else do you watch it for?
Right?
How? It's not that who wins, it's how they win.
It's a lot. But I hear you.
Wait a minute. As a spectator, not as a coach, okay, we watch the game because it takes our mind off things that we could be doing and we need the time off. We watch these games just like Rumbum says, you can take a walk in the park.
Right.
Back in Rumbum's time, there was no such thing as a football game. Okay. But there were parks and there were buildings and you could
He knew that there were sports because that's what the Greeks.
The Greeks. Yeah. He didn't get it. Okay. So that's an interesting discussion, a separate discussion for the Greek sports. Charlie, I think you have a great point. I just want to say, is there something so fundamentally different? I mean, you could say it's exercise, but we'll look at the Rambam.
Rabbi. But as a person who's played on a very high level of sports, when you reach a level where you run out on a field and there's 80,000 people in the stands screaming at you, you get your own high and you feel closer to whatever up there driving you. I mean, it's the most incredible feeling in the world when you run out with a Canadian jersey on your back and there's these people screaming in the stands in support of you. You get raised to a much higher level. I don't know how to describe it other than it's the level that you're at is so much higher than what it is.
I hear you.
Does it bring you closer to God?
I think it depends how you channel it. I would argue that it's a bit murky here. Here's why. But I think you'll see there might be more openness even than we've already seen in the Rambam. On the one hand, the Rambam is saying, listen, instrumental music, strolling through beautiful gardens and splendid buildings, gazing upon beautiful pictures. All those are pretty, I would say, mundane pursuits, right? There's nothing particularly special about any of that. It's all just very pleasant. Then again, the Rambam says, when someone suffers from melancholia, right? What he calls Mara Shechora. So that's like a disease almost. That's pretty extreme. So on the one hand, I'm not sure he's saying if you're just, you know, if you're just sort of wiped out, but you're not depressed, is this still something okay? A bit ambiguous, right? At the same time, it might depend on why you're doing it. But I also think that you have to really be pretty, but it's not free in the sense I could do whatever I want. And I think that's an important point. You can't say, okay, you know what? The football game is going to be on for 3.5 hours. And, you know, there's going to be such and such a commercial and such of this. It's not like a blank slate where just like, okay, I'm clearing. You have to, at every moment, you need to be asking, is this something that I should be, is this the way I should be using my time right now, knowing my emotional and psychological self? And I don't think that's such an easy question to ask. So I think it's a bit murky here. But here now the Rambam is going to describe, I think, something very interesting in terms of the sort of studying, the things we should learn. And that relates to Charlie's point before about knowledge of God. The Rambam is going to say that there are certain disciplines that we should study, either because they help us, you know, increase our knowledge, or because they help us think and rest our minds. So take a look what he says here. From this point of view, the study of medicine has a very great influence upon the acquisition of the virtues and of the knowledge of God, as well as upon the attainment of true spiritual happiness. Therefore, its study, again, medicine and acquisition are preeminently important religious activities, right? Studying medicine because they help someone know how to be healthy and help others be healthy so that they can serve God. It must not be ranked in the same class with the art of weaving or the science of architecture, which are of a lower stature, the Rambam says. But that doesn't mean he says you can't study them. Hold on. For all the architects out there, don't worry. For by it one learns, by medicine, one learns to weigh one's deeds and thereby human activities are rendered true virtues. Meaning the man who insists upon indulging in savory, sweet-smelling, and palatable food, although it be injurious and possibly may lead to serious illness or sudden death. Someone who's just going to keep eating and eating and eating. Oh, it's not healthy for me. I don't care. Yeah, I like it. It's what I like to eat. Don't boss me around, Mr. Doctor. Such a person, I mean, the Rambam is assuming if you study medicine, you will not participate in such activity. You will do the things that are healthy for you. If not, if you just let your appetites run wild, he says, in my opinion, should be classified with the beasts. You're more animal than human. Very extreme statement by the Rambam.
Like the anti-vaxxing doctors.
All right. No politics here. His conduct is not that of a man insofar as he's being endowed with understanding, but is rather the action of a man insofar as he's a member of the animal kingdom. Men, humans, are also a shtickle animal. We have animalistic instincts, and we also have potential for a higher calling. But if a person decides, I'm just going to eat whatever I want because it tastes good, I don't care about the impact it's going to have on my physical well-being, you're more like a beast. Right as it says in Psalms, in Tehillim, he is like the beasts who perish. Kebehemot nidmu. If you recognize that from the Psalm of Tehillim, we say at a Beit Avel, the house of a mourner, man acts like a human being only when he eats that which is wholesome. At times, avoiding the agreeable and partaking of the disagreeable, meaning that which is not as tasty, in search for the beneficial, the moel, that which is nutritious. Such conduct is in accordance with the dictates of reason. And by these acts, man is distinguished from all other beings. Similarly, the man satisfies his sexual passions whenever he has desire, regardless of good or ill effects. He acts as a brute and not as a man. Now, I think that's an important message, although a very, I think, basic one. But I'm not sure that's always the tendency of the societies we live in. I think there's a certain hedonistic tendency where it's just, you know, just do it. If you want it, if it feels good, go for it. And don't let anybody tell you otherwise. You. Be true to yourself. Be true to yourself. Be true to those things that you want. And the Rambam is saying, in a certain sense, if being true to yourself means satisfying every desire that you have, you are more animal than human. I think that's how the Rambam would look at such activity. It is possible, however, for one to shape one's conduct entirely. So that's in terms of what a person should do. But he says, even that's not enough. It is possible, however, for one to shape one's conduct entirely from the point of view of utility, as we have stated, meaning looking for the nutritious, the mo'il, instead of the arev, with no aim beyond that of maintaining the health of the body or guarding against disease. Meaning you have someone who's a health freak, right? Someone who is just very into health in and of itself without any other greater whole. So they're always exercising and dieting and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And you ask them, why are you doing all this? Why do you work so hard? And they're saying, I want to be healthy. I want to be healthy. That's it. And they're very invested in health. And the Rambam would say, that's not a bad goal, but it's not enough. Such a person does not deserve to be called virtuous, for just as he strives for the enjoyment of good health, meaning if it's just, I want to be healthy in and of itself for no other further purpose, another like him may have as his aim the gratification of eating or of sexual intercourse, none of which actions lead toward the true goal. The real duty of man is that in adopting whatever measures he may for his well-being and the preservation of his existence and good health, he should do so with the object of maintaining a perfect condition of the instruments of the soul, which are the limbs of the body, so that his soul may be unhampered and then he may busy himself in acquiring the moral and mental virtues. So it is with all the sciences and knowledge man may learn. The question is, I think, says the Rambam, do you see your body and physical health as a means or an end? Do you see your body as an implement of the soul and your limbs and your faculties as implements of the nishama to help you further your moral and intellectual development? Or are they ends unto themselves? And if they are ends unto themselves, as the Rambam, is it's so different to want to achieve a certain pleasure versus to want to achieve health. Ultimately, those are both physical pursuits, if not achieved for a greater end. So he's asking a lot in terms of the why question. But in terms of the what question, I think you'll see he's pretty open. So Rama continues here. In terms of the types of things that we study, concerning those which lead directly to this goal, knowledge of God, there is naturally no question, right? All the knowledge, philosophy, etc. And he mentioned medicine. But such subjects as mathematics, the study of conic sections, mechanics, various problems of geometry, hydraulics, and many others of a similar nature. What about just studying, I don't know, mathematics? Geometry? Is that going to lead you to knowledge of God? Interesting. The Rambam says, still a worthwhile pursuit. Should be studied still. The Rambam is saying you study all of this for the purpose of sharpening the mind and training the mental faculties by scientific investigations so that a person may acquire intellectual ability to distinguish demonstrative proofs from others, whereby he will be enabled to comprehend the essence of God. That's a lot he said there. What he's saying is we need to learn how to think. We need to learn how to think and how to analyze. Because there are some proofs, says the Rambam, some arguments which demonstrate, you know, the proof of God or demonstrate an understanding of God. And some arguments are off. They're false. They're not compelling. And to learn how to think, we can study all of these disciplines to train our minds. So the Rambam seems to be pretty open to the things that you might study or might do. But again, it all relates to the ultimate goal. The ultimate goal of knowledge of God and moral and mental development. Okay? So I think this relates to another important point, which I think I mentioned in the past, but I think is also very important, which is the goals of education. And if we ask the question of why do people go to school, right? What is it that they're aiming for? Why go to undergrad and university and graduate school, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera? So the Rambam is open to all of those things, it seems to me. The Rambam is open to getting an education, to studying. All of that is good. But the question is why you're doing it. And I think the Rambam would say the purpose of getting an education is to A, attain the knowledge of God, B, to learn how to think, you know, how to analyze and how to solve problems. And then even further down, obviously a person needs to make a living, but why? So there you're going to ask a lot of questions. I am studying X so that I can, you know, get such and such a position, so that I can acquire certain amounts of wealth, so that I can use the wealth in a certain way, which will be toward the positive end of developing my relationship with God, right? So there's a lot of why questions there that lead to the ultimate goal. And as we'll see, I want to pause maybe in just a minute. This is really wide ranging. So the Rambam, so we talked about what a person should eat, why a person should sleep, etc. We talked about, you know, sort of going for walks in the garden, what a person should study. The Rambam is going to go even more specific. What sort of things do we talk about? What are our topics of conversation? And this is where I think maybe he gets the most ambitious. Similarly, and we'll probably end with this, in regard to a man's conversation, he should speak only of those things that will be conducive to the true welfare of his soul and body, directing our speech, or that will tend to avert injury from them, whether his words concern themselves with science or virtue or praise of virtue or of a virtuous man or with censure of vice or of a vicious person. For to express contempt for those who are loaded with vice or to depict their deeds as contemptible, if done for the purpose of disparaging them in the eyes of other men who may avoid them and not do as they do, is indeed virtuous. To criticize those who have performed evil acts can be productive. Does not scripture say, the Torah says, right? Kemaase Eretz Mitzrayim, Kemaase Eretz Canaan. After the actions of the land of Egypt, you shall not do, and after the doings of the land of Canaan. Also the story of Sodom and all the passages occurring in scripture, which censure those laden with vice and represent their doings disgraceful, and those passages which praise and hold the good and high esteem, endeavor, as I have said, to induce men to follow the path of the righteous to shun the ways of the wicked. So what the Rambam essentially saying here is, what about storytelling? A person likes to, so Rambam is telling us to direct our speech. Is it appropriate to use time telling stories or discussing the news? What about literature? Does the Rambam have room for that in his schedule? And I think the answer again is, well, it depends. Because I think what the Rambam is saying here is stories about virtuous and non-virtuous activity. Stories which teach us about the way people act, whether it teaches in the way people about the way people act in terms of praising certain behavior and activities, or the opposite, help to shape our character and that of others. So I think he's really pretty expansive here. Storytelling is a legitimate enterprise, provided that you're doing it in a way that is productive. Okay, so I think I want to pause here for now, and maybe we'll do a little bit more next week. So I think what we've seen, because we said a lot, is that the Rambam really has a very wide scope of the sorts of ways we can spend our time. There's a lot there. There's learning mathematics and geometry, and there's taking walks in gardens and looking at pleasant buildings and pleasant images, and eating and drinking and all of that. A very, very broad agenda that the Rambam has here. But I think in terms of our question, is there such a thing as free time? I think it depends what you mean. There is such a thing as free time if what you mean by free time is time used toward, channeled toward, making sure that you maintain your health so that you can do that which is most important. And I think the Rambam understands that to maintain your health, you might need to do a lot of different types of things. Even things that are just entertaining or relaxing. And we didn't get to it today. We'll see next time. Even humor. Even giving your mind a break. Even what Alan was saying before, we'll see next time. The Rambam has room for that as well. So there's a lot of different room for acts which aren't traditional ways of serving God. But is there free time in terms of you get to do whatever you want thoughtlessly without any goal in mind? Why are you doing this? I don't know, because I felt like it, and that's what I was in the mood to do. Why are you just like scrolling on your phone endlessly and just swiping and swiping and swiping and swiping? Well, you know what? I just want to pass the time by. That, I think, to that the answer is no. One shouldn't just waste their time. But if it's not, but what constitutes wasting time depends on the person. So I'll end with the following thing, which is, I think, as follows. On the one hand, this is very demanding. It's a lot to ask for. The Rambam says this himself. We didn't quite get to it today. The Rambam says, I'm asking for a lot. But I find it quite inspiring also, because given this broad perspective on what constitutes the service of God, it means that every moment of your life can really be the service of God. It means that when you relax, and when you take a walk, and when you eat, and when you sleep, and when you drink, and when you spend time with friends, and even possibly, maybe, for the right person, at the right time, when you just engage in some sort of entertainment, as long as you have your eyes on the ultimate goal of becoming a better Oved Hashem, understanding God better, becoming a better person, all that can be imbued with the meaning of serving God better. So I encourage all of us, and we hear it so, that we should all have the blessing of imbuing every moment of our life with the beauty and the meaning of serving God in everything that we do, and so that every moment of our life can truly be meaningful. Thanks for your time tonight, everybody. Happy to stay for a few
weeks. Thank you very much, Rob.